But the difficulty is that while something like £36 million is generated at by Premier Rugby, and then after costs that flows through to the clubs, as soon as you do that, player wages go up. Or when a club gets more money, rather than using it to develop facilities or balance books or use it constructively, it flows through to players. And you find that you're back in the same hole where you started. Mm. So everybody now says, oh, if we could just generate another couple of million at a club, we'd be in great shape. You would. But you give it all to the players.
Mm. Because just like football.
Just like football. Mm. Because you'd say, well, this is great, but another 2 million, we can run for winning something here. So how do you win something? You buy extra players, because you think that's the formula. So you buy extra players, we buy coaching, extra physio, extra this, extra that, it's gone. And you're back in the hole where you started.
How about the salary cap?
Salary cap is a good thing, because it just holds the league, it holds the league together. And what it does is it creates enough constraint, and I'll explain this in a second, enough constraint to make it competitive between the top team and the bottom team. And what I mean by that, it is clear that clubs are breaking the salary cap, in my opinion. But it doesn't matter, to a certain degree. The reason it doesn't matter is that if you have an international player, let's say you know that international player is going to earn somewhere between 120 and 180,000. 200,000, say, but somewhere between 100 and 200,000, depending where he is, on his, in his age, profile, experience, etc. So in there, you can probably work out what he's earning within these two areas. So if a club decides what we're going to do, so you could take pretty much every player in the league and you could predict his salary within 30 grand. So if I was running a club and I wanted to break the salary cap, what I would do is if he's on the top end of that salary, I'd disclose the bottom end and I'd have him paid from somewhere else. So what you've done is you've saved 30 grand. So if you save 30 grand on 30 players, you add that up, that is the most that you can break the salary cap by. So realistically, the most, if you are extremely brave, extremely creative, and you have another source of money, you can break the salary cap by £1 million. Now, does £1 million... I'm just rounding figures off. Does £1 million give you enough to win the league? For sure, no. So, if your team, I'll just grab numbers. If the bottom team in the league spends £3.5 million, and the top and the salary cap's at four, okay, so they're 500 below, they're £1 million below above. They're spending five. They're spending £3.5 million. It's only £1.5 million difference. You take some of those out at international time, you add a few injuries, you add a coach who's pretty average versus a coach who is very good and some emerging players, etc. The league still works. If you say no salary cap, this team will then not spend £5 million, they'll spend £8 million. £8 million versus £3.5 million. Now you've got the difference altogether. And what would happen is your top four teams, you'd have a two or three part league, these top four teams will spread away, and then suddenly you've got what football's got, sort of. Football's different because a lucky goal gets you away, but you'd have top four or five at the top and a league like they in France. It would just do that. Mm. And the salary cap keeps it together. Mm. Enough.
But you need it Europe-wide, really, don't you? Because, I mean, the Heineken Cup and the Hamlin Cup have become so important, and with no salary cap in France, things were getting very unequal, as they are, of course, with the Irish provinces as well.
Yeah, there is that. There is that, but they've now introduced a salary cap, and they've also got a quota system over there. So it is pulling it in a little bit.
Yeah.
And you do have to look and say, well, what is the value of the Heineken Cup in real terms? I think if you build a team to win the Heineken Cup, then you're just pouring money down the drain because you won't get there. I don't think Gloucester can ever win the Heineken Cup.
Let me turn that question
round. Piece of luck, yeah.
Actually, how important to the finances of Gloucester Rugby is the Heineken Cup?
It's not important. I used to think it was
worth half. That's interesting, because it's not the public perception.
No. I used to think it was worth £500,000. I now don't think it is, because I think the Amlin, I think there are enough good names in the Amlin to make it interesting. Fans want to see us win. So the Amlin is becoming better. There is a chance now that some of the Heinekens drop into the Amlin, which is quite nice. And what is better? Is it better to pay Stade Francais in the Amlin, say, have a really good game here and then go out there and maybe win out there, or to play to lose and get turned over, as a bad example? If you build a team, if Gloucester was to try and build itself to win the European Cup, we would need to be hugely over the salary cap, and I don't believe we would get there. And I think in terms of the future of the club, I think it would be the wrong thing to do. I think the best thing to do is to concentrate on the league, to take the LV Cup seriously, and to do as I do think it's important to be in the Heineken Cup, because it's what attracts players, it's what people do like to see, but to build the team to win the Heineken Cup, I think on the balance of the club is the wrong thing to do.
I remember you being interviewed way back when you first came to Gloucester.
Yeah.
And you were saying that one of Tom's stated objectives was to achieve success in Europe.
Yeah.
And I can see how that view has gradually eroded, if you like.
It has. I think because the objectives have changed as well. Because he came in with very deep pockets, very, very ambitious, and he wanted to achieve that. And, you look at the teams that Philippe Saint-André brought in, you know, they were stacked with superstars.
Yeah.
He was clearly on a mission.
Mm.
But we were losing £2.5 million a year.
All right.
Yeah. So his objective then was, we can't lose that level of money. I can't, that's not where I want it. So suddenly the balance has to be a balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does take some of the excitement off it, honestly. Yeah. You know, creating that does take a bit of excitement. Because to have those teams that you knew had a chance of winning the Heineken Cup is great. But the objective's changed.
Can I go back to your job here at the club and how you saw it when you first came into the club, what your priorities were and how those have changed over the years since?
When I first came in, I looked at, in the early weeks, a list of priorities, and I put them on a foolscap sheet, and there were 32 lines, and I was halfway down the second sheet. There was so much to do, and it was very, very difficult to know how to pull out the bits that needed to happen. The management board that were in place here had a much bigger task. Their task wasn't about the operational stuff, it was about survival. And suddenly, the survival, for me, it was much easier. So I can't criticise that group in any way, because they did a fantastic job keeping the club alive. That wasn't a problem for me, because I had Tom Walkinshaw with deep pockets. So there was never any question mark of our survival.
What individuals is it you'd think deserve that credit?
I think the people like David Foyle, who was chairman, Mike Warner, that was on the board. You had John Hall on the board. You had Tim Curtis, was a solicitor. I think Doug Wadley was there. Alan Brin, You had that board there that did a fantastic job keeping it going at very, very difficult times. And for me, that wasn't, that issue was taken away. So now it was about, I think when people, the business formula is a really simple one. It's about getting something on the pitch that people want to see. So that means it's got to be good enough. So how do we know if it's good enough? Well, it's an easy measurement. It's by how many games it wins. So when you buy a ticket, you have an expectation of what you have bought. Okay? And there's your expectation here. So I bought this ticket, my expectation is here. When you've come to the game, you have a perception of what you've just received. And if there's a gap, you've got to find out what's in that gap, and you've got to close it. And if you can close it, then you've absolutely nailed it. But what's important is that when people buy a ticket, they will only buy a ticket if they think we've got a chance of winning today. They will not buy a ticket if they think we're going to lose today. They'll buy it if they think there's a chance of winning. So what you've got to do is you've got to make sure your team is good enough so that people will buy those tickets and that they do believe you have a chance of winning. Now, it doesn't mean that you've got to go and say we're going to beat every team in Europe, because that's the bit which the wealthy guys do. You've got to have it where it is good enough that you're going to win the majority of your home games, and we're very lucky that the majority, 70% of home games are won at home. It's very lucky from a commercial point. But you've also got to get the balance that you haven't spent too much. You spent enough to make it competitive. You haven't spent too much so that the business isn't professional, isn't commercially fails. Unless you have a Saracens objective where it's just win. They lost £6 million last year. Yeah. I wouldn't know how to lose £6 million.
Well, what would happen to the club here if they lost £6 million?
It would be over.
Yeah.
So it's quite an interesting, but it's a fairly simple model. But it's quite tricky to get it there. Yeah.